Coming up on the Midday 180, we'll catch up with Javon Kearse and Jim Washburn as we look back on the Freaks' rookie season of 1999. David Ewing gives you the history of Hat Show Print Shop, plus John McClain details discussion happening at the NFL owners' meetings. The Tuesday edition of the Midday 180 starts now.
From 104.5 The Zone, this is the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
Glad you're with us. We are ready to go. Staring at Paul Kuharski in Brentwood. I'm Jonathan Hutton in Murfreesboro. David Reed is the chairman of the board in Nashville. Jam-packed show. Going to be a lot of fun. Gentlemen, good morning.
We're wearing red today. I don't know in honor of what. Reed's got just a red logo. But Hutton and I, all out in red. So say what you will. Bloodbath is coming.
Midday 180 school colors. What I guess what are school color for Midday 180 be red? The 180s in red.
I guess. Speaking of school, Simon, yesterday we got to go to school, ride through the pickup line, and they went in and got his bagged up stuff and put it in our trunk, and we drove it home. And that was the end of school. Tomorrow he's got a Zoom party. Quote unquote. And that'll be that. And I told him he should have like a big drink on the Zoom party, like Dad has at his Zoom parties. Like we'll put a orange slice on it and everything. And
he's done that.
He was
before.
A sexist on that, and he said that the girls would do that.
No, he's done that before with us and one of the mixers. He had a like apple juice.
Oh, he
or
came
something.
Over and chugged it. Yeah, didn't get the big effect that he was seeking.
Oh, I loved it. Like years from now, he's going to appreciate that moment.
Maybe more. So hey, we're having headset issues over here. We bought his name's day was last Sunday, St. Simon the Zealot, and I got him a new headset for his PS4 Fortnite playing. And this is the second thing. So we've had an eBay issue on something that never showed up. That was apparently a scam. And he was buying like a Fortnite identity that had all these old skins from like early years of Fortnite that you can't like get now. And wow. This he was thrilled about this thing, and it's never shown up, and I still haven't resolved it. eBay's got a money back guarantee, so I'm counting on us getting this money back. But now this headset, the plug just won't click in a way that like he has to hold the plug in order to hear people. And so now I'm going back and forth with the seller on that. I don't have the box or anything. It just, you know, it's been a week and a half, 2 weeks. It doesn't work.
You know what you
need.
Spent
$45 on it. I want it back.
You need Kirby. This is Kirby. When you need Kirby.
I'll go over to the seller. I don't know where it is, somewhere in America. Strong arm him.
No, he would come over and fix the headset for him.
Oh, see how you could think of this two ways? I automatically went to him being the heavy. You automatically
he'll play any role you want. He'll be your guy.
That's the beauty of Kirby. I don't know if it's – I mean, I imagine Kirby could fiddle with it somehow. It just doesn't click in. I don't know. I'm not technically savvy, but it's clear that something doesn't work.
So two quick things. Do you always get Simon a gift for his name day? This is the first you've mentioned this on the show.
Not always, but I like the
lucrative
idea
pay for a child. And like, seriously, like, do you get a present like you would on your birthday?
Well, he certainly does from his godparents. Usually get something, not necessarily big. I remember very much my name's days at the end of June or July. I should know that better. And I remember getting stuff as a kid, particularly a big wheel. It was for probably a 3-year cycle there. I got, I tore up my big wheel pretty good, and I would get a new big wheel. And so I remember that. Not so much a gift-giving holiday, but family made a little bit of a deal out of it. And so Simon's Saint Day, May 10th, is also the saint day of the saint his mother took on when she joined the church. And it happened to fall on Sunday this year, so he heard his name mentioned.
So
during the church service that we watched on TV.
So if there's not a Saint Jonathan, I would go by whatever saint I took on by joining the church. Is that the idea?
Yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, Jonathan, I would think you would take John, and there's no lack of Johns.
Okay. I'll take John. I'll go Doug Matthews.
You've got John the Baptist. You've got John the Evangelist. Plenty of Johns.
Middle name's David, so I've got ideas there too, right?
Plenty
options.
Of
options.
Plenty of options. So this was an exciting side note. If people are interested or bearing with us during this, I don't know. I think the shock in a lot of families. It seems Southern wise, you're generally named after somebody.
Yes.
And I think in a lot of families, you're named after somebody. So Simon was a out of nowhere name. He was not named after anybody. And we don't have a huge pool in our family, though on my dad's side, my dad's Sergius and his dad was Andrew. And they went back and forth with Sergius and Andrew for a lot of years.
So
first son,
did you and Teresa battle over a name?
No, we both liked Simon very much.
Was there a second option? Because like I was adopted. My name for about 3 days was Matthew.
Is that right?
In the hospital. And then, of course, my parents named me Jonathan. And then my middle name's David. I'm named after my dad. So for 3 days, like they told me straight up, like, yeah, your name is Matthew. So I've always remembered that.
That's interesting. So we don't have any Simons in the family that we knew about. But my mother, who went through a big stage of looking through the family tree and everything, like a lot of people have done, found probably would have been, based on her calculations, early 1800s, that there was a Simon on her mother's side of the family. So like Simon's quadruple great-grandmother, grandfather on his grandmother's side was a Simon. So we thought that was pretty cool because we had no idea that there was any Simon in the family anywhere.
I remember the day that you came out to training camp and told everyone what his name was going to be.
Well, the classic conversation. So Teresa had a hard time. She was, and we didn't do the naming ahead or anything. We wanted to see him, all of that.
Yeah.
The first conversation we had with both sets of parents, we said we hadn't decided. Then we decided, and she's like, don't have a conversation with either sets of parents without telling him a name. And so then I was kind of in the bathroom because it's kind of echoey because I'm trying to let her sleep. And so I guess my voice wasn't that clear and my mom wasn't hearing me well. And she had said, Simon. And she said, Iman? And to this day, she swears that she was hearing me say Simeon, which, I mean, at least is a legitimate name. I think a much lesser name. But I swear she was saying Iman. And I'm like, Mom, listen to yourself. You're saying Iman. I'm saying Simon, one of the 12 apostles. You're familiar with the 12 apostles. He's one of the 12. And you're saying Iman. What is Iman?
Maybe it's like Houston. You know, she just took the S off. It's Iman to her.
She's saying Iman, and then she went to Simeon, and I'm saying Simon, and I don't know how unclear I could be with it.
Thank you for playing along with some of those questions. I am fascinated by the name day. I had not heard you mention that before, and as growing up, if I had a name day, you better believe I was cashing in on it.
Well, I mean, I think it's a fitting name for him because Simon was Simon the Zealot, and this Simon is
nice.
A zealot, certainly, for the things he's into, like right now, skateboarding.
No Chad Withrow today. He's on furlough this week, but we will have him back next week. All three of us are here next week.
It's going to be a party. It's going to be wild.
That's right. Buckle up. It's going to be a fast-paced show today as well. Coming up at 11:15, David Ewing joins us. We've just wrapped up the three-part series on the Ryman. We now move forward to the details and backstory and history of Hat Show Print Shop, which has been in Nashville since 1879, and you see them everywhere. If you have seen photos of our live broadcast on Skype, you have seen Hat Show prints behind Paul. This is going to be awesome, and the details and the history behind that business is really cool. David Ewing joins us today at 11:15. At noon, the Freak, Javon Kearse, is today's Nashville sports history retrospective. We'll look back at his historical 1999 rookie season, 14.5 sacks, 10 forced fumbles. He had 3.5 sacks in the postseason that don't count on that 14.5. We will we'll have Javon on, and then his defensive line coach, Jim Washburn, whose first season with the Titans as D-line coach was 1999. That'll be in the noon hour, and then John McClain today at 1 o'clock. Phone lines are available, though, this hour. 615-737-1045, our number, 737-1045. And we throw out the phone lines, Paul, with the idea that we can use this hour to chat Titans football. There's a lot that's happened over the last 2 weeks where you and I haven't been on this show together to chat and discuss everything from front office decisions and retirements and hires to just assessing the roster and the schedule that was released over the last 2 weeks. You want to get into it this hour?
Absolutely. It'll be great.
Let's hit it. And you can join us, 615-737-1045. Our number, this is the Midday 180. We're queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, who is opening up again on East Nashville, their East Nashville location, following all the tornado damage. And then, of course, the coronavirus pandemic shutdown. They're back. June 1st is when they're reopening in East Nashville. Of course, they remain open and have remained open, 12 South and Sylvan Park, for takeout during all this. You can also go to each location and grab some delicious barbecue. But specifically for the East Nashville location, reopening June 1st, Monday, June 1st. And I stress that because we're less than 2 weeks away from that, and they're hiring. If you or someone you know is interested in a job, needs a job right now, if you're interested in joining the Edley's Barbecue family, simply go to edleysbbq.com/jobs, edleysbbq.com/jobs, and you can get more information. You can also visit the Sylvan Park location in person this week and apply there in person. With Paul Koharski, I'm Jonathan Hutton. No Chad Withrow this week. David Reed is the chairman of the board. Javon Kearse, Jim Washburn coming up in the noon hour. A lot has happened over the last 2 weeks, Paul. You go on furlough, then me, and within that time frame, Steve Underwood has retired. They've hired Burke Nyhill to replace him as the team's president. Monty Ossenfort is in as the director of scouting. A lot of structure changes within the front office, and I like the stability that we see within that framework.
Yeah, it's interesting because as the league owners with a remote meeting today discuss these Rooney Rule adjustments and some of the things we discussed yesterday and that I wrote about last night, the Burke Nyhill hire, if it was made or if Amy wanted to promote him today or tomorrow, she would have had to have gone more slowly and brought in outsiders to interview minorities and or women. I'm not quite sure on the details of that, but that position would require a Rooney Rule type scenario. Now, I know there are people out there that would object to that scenario. Hey, if she had this grand plan in her head, and she brought in this guy in 16 and liked the way he kind of grew in the role and that he was the appropriate hire to replace Underwood, so be it for her. Mm-hmm. To which I would say, sure. The thing they want is that when he was hired in 2016 as an outsider, that other candidates be interviewed there and get a chance to be heard from and seen. And if they don't get this job, that they can then say when they apply for the next job, hey, I interviewed with the Titans for their general counsel job also. And then somebody calls Amy and says, hey, how was, you know, John Smith? And she says, oh, I like John Smith. I ended up going with Burke Nyhill, but you should check him out. And his name's on the pipeline and he can say, I interviewed with the Titans, or her name. And so it's not as much about this promotion necessarily as it is about what happened in 2016.
Well, and just to further the point, Burke Nyhill, based on the statements from maybe Adam Strunk and Steve Underwood, who joined us during McLean's segment a couple of weeks ago, they said it was something that they decided on in April, that this was going to be the move they were making in April. So I don't think you were trying to say or come across as though they made the move prior to all this happening today to avoid it.
And they didn't anticipate this. But if it happened now, it would have been slowed down and she would have had to abide by an adjusted rule.
Right. Two examples of the minority hiring within the Titans organization. Gil Beverly brought in, and then last year he's been promoted to an even higher title. He is the highest ranking executive on the business side of the organization, if you look at the structure model of the team right now. And Janine Kaufman is a female executive within the organization.
Yeah, who's been with the team
who
forever.
Works for a female owner.
Yeah, she's the COO. Yeah, so I mean they're well represented on the non-football side in terms. Also, if you look at who came in on the football side, Anthony Midgett came in to replace Kerry Combs, and who is it that got a promotion on the football side? Safeties coach. I'm going to forget his name now. Booker.
I believe that's right.
Who got his own title as opposed to defensive backs assistant is now overseeing safeties. So both guys in the secondary minority coaches now. I haven't looked closely at how Vrabel's staff measures up against the league, but I think there's a fair cross section of representation there. Listen, they're fixing the biggest thing, and this has been undersold to me. The league shot itself in the foot by doing away with the ability to interview assistants elsewhere for coordinator jobs. And so one of the ways for minorities and up-and-coming coaches who aren't minorities to get upward mobility in the league is for a position coach to get permission to come and interview for a coordinator job. In the present day, and that went away 15 years ago, probably, maybe more. The only way now that you could do that is if a friend lets you. Sean McVay let Matt LaFleur leave to come to Tennessee to be offensive coordinator. If he doesn't let him come, he can't come. And so all these blocked interview requests didn't do well for this. And now you're going to have to let a guy interview for these positions, which is upward mobility, which should never have been done away with. The league did a poor job of managing those titles or whatever it was, where head coaches were taking advantage of assistant to the head coach or offensive or defensive coordinator. It got too sloppy, and so they put a lid on the bottle, and that wasn't the proper solution. And they suffered the consequences of that with a lack of minority hiring for coordinator jobs. And whose fault was that? That was the league's fault.
Another idea, line of thinking I've had here with not allowing that coach to go interview. This is a very competitive league. That goes on. I don't even need to say that, right? If let's use our show as an example. If an outside radio station said, we'd like to interview you, and we're going to double your salary and put you in drive time, wouldn't Cumulus be smart to block that?
Yeah.
And not allow us to go?
Absolutely.
Since we're under contract?
Absolutely.
I mean, even though it's an advancement for the three of us, you know, that's how I'm just putting myself in that situation. I understand if you feel like you have a great asset to your organization, you don't want them going out the door in your conference, in your division, in the league. I mean, I get it, but I also understand the frustration from the coach who says, I'm not moving up any further here because you're ahead of me and you're the decision maker. So give me a chance to go somewhere else.
And
I mean, do you think that's how they're likely thinking there is, we're not allowing you to go because even we're friends and all that, but also we want to be the best we can be at this position, and you're my guy, so you can't leave me.
Well, here's the other thing. The good teams lose coaches. Belichick has lost coaches after coach, right? And adjusted to it.
Based on the rule structure, though, he didn't lose Nick Caserio.
No, right. But even within the rule structure, he's lost a lot of guys to head coaching jobs. He managed to hold on to McDaniels and that whole weird thing. But if you look back at how many guys he lost from his staff to go be head coaches, it's time and time again.
But that's within the rules, though, right? Like,
within the rules.
He has to let them go interview for the head coaching job.
And now it'll conceivably be more. He's also got the smallest staff in the league and the tightest operation. And I think it's just nature of the beast. If you have good coaches, you're going to lose some. Mike Vrabel's only been here 2 years. He didn't hold Kerry Combs back from letting him go. He had no obligation to let him go to Ohio State, but he respects the guy. The guy was getting more money to go to Ohio State, for one thing. He wanted that job, and Vrabel said, I'm not going to hold the guy back from a job that he wants that's going to pay him more.
And I respect that.
Better job. And so he lets him go. And I think good coaches generally are going to do that. They hope, you know, they don't lose three at a time. And, you know, it's just kind of a fact of life. And good coaches also have files in their drawer of guys that they think fit what they do, that are contingency plans and next man up kind of thing.
And I'm all for guys getting in front of the room and getting that opportunity to interview for these big positions, because there's a lot of talent behind the scenes that are getting passed up for retreads. You mentioned some of the coaches yesterday, Paul, that are rehired. You know, Jason Garrett immediately lands as the offensive coordinator with the New York Giants, for instance, after, and look, he's a good coordinator. Dallas had one of the highest rankings offenses in the league last year, believe it or not. But in the fans' eye, he wasn't successful. But he immediately lands in the division. So, the NBA, for instance, is a lot worse when it comes to retreads, but I understand your point yesterday with some of the hires that were made.
Are non-minorities allowed to interview for these offensive and defensive coordinator jobs? That's not clear to me. And I would hope it's everybody.
I have not read it that specific to the rule. I thought this was the Rooney rule, which would be minorities within the league.
That's not going to go over well if, for an open coordinator job, you can only interview people you get permission for and any minority you want.
It's also not a bad thing, though.
No.
You know,
it's not a bad thing, but it's not.
I think they have good intentions with this.
Oh, I do, too. They definitely have good intentions for it. And by the way, we talked about this a little bit yesterday. I was talking about Gerard Mayo skipping, you know, the defensive assistant or the defensive quality control entry level job. I talked to Chris Hope about this a little bit yesterday and wrote about it. And he was saying, you know, he thought that might be another way to agreed with my premise, that might be another way to kind of encourage some players who want in to get in. But then I talked to a former NFL player who did skip that off that stage, that quality control job. And he said, I sucked when I started, and I should have been a quality control coach at the beginning. And that's not necessarily the best thing for guys coming in. So interesting thinking.
Coming up, let's discuss the scouting department and John Robinson's side of the front office and Monty Ossenfort and what that means moving forward for the structure of how they're deciding going about finding new talent to join the roster. 615-737-1045, our number. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 1045 The Zone. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Almost lunchtime. Brisket tacos sound delicious right now. Didn't have breakfast. No surprise. Edley's Nachos, delicious as well. The barbecue, loaded fries, delicious. The Tuck Special, always a hit. You can check it out, edleysbbq.com, or download the Edley's app. That's also where you can get information on how they're hiring for their East Nashville location. edleysbbq.com/jobs. The Titans hired Monty Ossenford a couple of weeks ago. First time that Paul and I have been able to detail this on air. And he's now the director of player personnel within the organization. He had been in New England for 15 years. He was hired there in 2003. And he was most recently the college scouting director for Bill Belichick. He's been the man that has been talked about in the discussion of replacing Nick Caserio if Caserio left for Houston. I remember his name popping up there. Of course, that did not happen. He had interviewed for the GM job in Cleveland this offseason. And I mentioned the Texans being involved. I'm sure they have contacted him as well, but they've been blocked by the Patriots, going back to our previous conversation, Paul. In 2013, though, I set all that up to say that John Robinson was Monty Ossenfort. He was the director of college scouting for the New England Patriots. He left New England. He went to Tampa Bay, where he became the director of player personnel. And that is the same position that Ossenfort has now as he leaves New England, director of player personnel. Ryan Cowden remains the vice president of player personnel. And you now have Ossenfort, two future candidates for general manager positions across the league. And you have a proven general manager in John Robinson. It's a stable front office with a clear direction and a clear process in place. And how far do you have to go back to feel as certain in that statement, Paul?
Well, I think this is a heck of a hire. I mean, here's a guy who's coveted. He's trusted by the guy who probably trusts the fewest people or has the smallest circle of trust in Belichick. And, you know, I would think that that he's probably on a GM path. I mean, he's already interviewed. So he may not be here for long. He could be, you're saying he was Robinson in New England. He could also be Robinson in Tampa Bay, where Robinson went to work for Jason Light, knowing it was probably just going to be a couple of years until he got his own opportunity. But I also, you know, this is a thing that bugs me about the operation here. And John Robinson's done a pretty damn good job drafting, particularly the further he's gone. But these scouts don't have a lot of say, and they're all young. They file their reports, but what was the quote that Robinson gave me when I did that piece on the scouts, that they're not invested in the guys, so to speak. And I would think you want scouts who are invested in guys who develop that kind of feeling.
What's interesting, though, and hold that thought. I only want to bring this up because I can compare it to New England. Whenever he was hired, I went and found a behind-the-scenes video that the Patriots put out on their scouting department.
Was it the one that got them in trouble? Did it have sideline views of the Browns or the Bengals?
No, this was from a couple of years back. And I don't – Ossenfort's in there. He's featured. He's sitting at his desk, and he's being interviewed about their structure and what they do throughout the year. Caserio's running the show at the front of the conference room table. And as you look around – there's not an old guy sitting at that table at all. So just to follow up on your point about the young group, it's exactly what, and they just read off their scouting reports to Caserio, who's taking notes along with others in the room. And then he takes that to Belichick. That's how they work.
Yeah. But Ossenfort kind of qualifies as an old guy, at least in the Titans thing. He's a 15-year guy. He's older guy.
He's the
not
head of
a 70-year-old scout. Right. But they're adding some of that with him now. A guy I would think has clout with Robinson, who was in what was an empty chair before that. And so another voice with clout seems good to me. And now Cowden and Ossenfort, two guys who are more powerful sounding boards – I like the sound of that. I think it's a good get. I wonder how long he's going to be around, or you know, if Cowden potentially gets one. I think that Austin Ford is a more coveted commodity than Cowden. You haven't heard Cowden's name that much. You hear him, you know, on the back end of a list and outside of Carolina, where he had come from. You know, you've heard his name tagged onto the bottom of a list once or twice about GM things, but it hasn't gotten nearly as far as Austin Ford has in his flirtation with real GM jobs. So we'll see.
Yeah, and from the time Robinson left the New England front office in 2013, the scouting department in 2013, the Patriots have not drafted a player that has made a Pro Bowl. That counts for AP All-Pros as well. So from that time forward, that's just how it's been. And if you're a Titans fan looking for key ingredients in your front office and to keep it running the right way, I mean, that's the optimist approach, right? That is, you're hiring away a guy who was great for a championship organization, and now he's bringing another piece there with him in Nashville. The only guy in the front office, I believe, that has ties to New England with Robinson specifically. But again, you're looking for that next crop of GM talent, just like Arthur Smith is a part of that next group that will get head coaching opportunities if he continues down the path he's on right now.
Two thoughts about Austin Ford. Like on the, you know, on the one hand, you think, wow, this is a great get. He let his contract expire, and he clearly wanted to get somewhere else to, I don't know, extend his wings and see if it couldn't be a stepping stone to something bigger. But I talked to a friend in the league about, you know, what size get it was for the Titans, and he said, well, New England let him go. They didn't let Josh McDaniels go. They haven't let Casario go. If New England wants you, they find a way to keep you. And so he thought not as significant as I was feeling like that the Titans got Austin Ford in that the Patriots didn't pull out all the stops to keep him. So there's just the devil's advocate side to it.
Well, they let Jason Light go, John Robinson go. I mean, there's other examples, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, is it them letting him go so that he could eventually, you know, let Jason Light go for a GM job and then let John Robinson go, I guess.
He took the job in Tampa that Austin Ford just took here.
Right. To go be a stepping stone to a GM. So are they doing him a favor? I don't know. We'll find out.
615-737-1045, our number, 737-1045, if you would like to jump in and talk some Titans football with us. Mike Vrabel said the goal this season is to host a playoff game because the road gauntlet, while possible in the postseason, isn't really probable to win three straight to make it to a Super Bowl. The big key to hosting a playoff game this year is staring right at them on the schedule. We'll discuss next. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. The next Midday Mixer takes place this Thursday. It's presented by Nelson's Greenbrier Distillery. If you'd like to be in this week's mixer, we currently have a lot of spots open. Running this back another week because we had such a great response over the last five that we've done. Let's do one more. If you'd like to join us this Thursday night, Midday Mixer, where you grab a drink, get in a Zoom chat, and hang out with us for an off-the-record discussion. We will bring a special guest with us as well on Thursday night. Hit us up on Twitter. You can just direct message us and let us know you'd like to be in. We'll send the details from there. You can also message us on Facebook. Just search out the Midday 180, like that page, and then send a message. We'll get back to you that way. Again, it's presented by Nelson's Greenbrier Distillery.
So Florida's opened up. So I guess to a degree, guys can do what they want. Tom Brady, this is a great, great scoop by Rick Stroud and Joey Knight.
Is this Tampa Bay Times? Is that photo today?
Yes.
Is it ads?
Yeah, Tom Brady in an orange jersey over pads worked out with a bunch of guys at Berkeley Prep School in Tampa Bay at 7 a.m., about a two-hour workout. So here's my question, though. It seems to me, and we have to get official word on this, and I'm sure the league will be patsies. If he's getting six or eight guys together for a workout, I don't really understand how this is different than saying like coaches and players can't be back at one facility if a bunch of other facilities are, because of state or city laws, closed. So if Florida's open and Tom Brady can get his guys together, but New Jersey's closed and Daniel Jones can't get his guys together, is that an imbalanced playing field? It's absolutely an imbalanced playing field. So,
well, you're assuming that Daniel Jones is in New York right now.
Well, that's where they would get together. You know what I'm saying?
Not necessarily. So they could go to Florida. I mean, Tannehill and Jonnu Smith play for the Tennessee Titans, but they're catching throwing passes in Florida.
Right. But two guys to me is different than like this is closer to an offensive practice or 7-on-7. Or not a 7-on-7, but a receiver practice.
But that's, I mean, that's typical for an off season. This is no typical off season.
That's
though.
What I'm saying, though. Does it strike you as fair? Like, or does the league now have to issue an edict on what's allowed for teams? I think so. They're in Tampa because they're the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And so I think you have to presume teams working near their facility, and the Giants couldn't do this right now, I don't think. Several other teams couldn't do this right now, I don't think. The California teams couldn't do this right now. I think the league needs to legislate this the way the league is legislating going to facilities, or you're lending yourself to some degree of chaos, or strict rule followers versus non-strict rules followers. I don't like it. And you know, because this is Brady, they're going to not really say anything. But don't you think they need to say something on this is okay and the rest of you may do this?
I think it's brilliant on their part. And honestly, I don't see anything wrong with it as I think about it. I mean, Tannehill, Jonnu Smith said they found a private park in Florida that they did nothing against Florida rules when they were throwing. I mean, that's something that every team is not able to do, is find a private park. It's brilliant. As long as you're within the rules of the state you're in or county or whatever it might be. And a lot of these guys have the means to travel for these, like you're mentioning the wide receiver work that quarterbacks do, that Mariota would get the wide receivers together. They would fly to Oregon to do that. They wouldn't do that in Nashville. So, and sometimes they would go to Father Ryan, but there are other examples of them going out of state for that work. So I think you're looking at it because they're in Tampa and they're in Florida. They have the advantage. When every quarterback in the league, if they wanted to, could find a spot in Florida to do this right now, and Texas, and other spots.
So I'm asking around, the league hasn't said anything about players congregating, but if they got hurt, teams could claim NFI, and then NFI would come potentially with financial implications.
Great story from Rick Stroud as I just read through this. He is detailing this like
he's
a training
watching
camp practice.
Now, I don't know if he's watching it like from the bleachers with them knowing he's watching it, or if he's watching it from the bushes. What do you think?
The photo is definitely from the bushes. I don't know if Pac-Man Jones is there or not. But
I mean, I don't think Tom Brady wants anybody watching this. That runs counter to his nature. But he got a tip that this was happening, and he crushed it.
Yeah, and he's walking through the wide receiver drills as the quarterback, telling them where he wants to make their breaks.
He's got the attendance.
With some more headlines, Reed's got them for you next. Midday 180 queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone.